We'll begin with Prabhupada's introduction, which is actually the beginning of Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This nectar devotion is a summary study of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu written by Srila Prabhupada for the purpose of teaching the students and people in the world in general that would become his students, teaching them how to practice Krishna consciousness in such a way that they develop love of God. There are many ways that someone could practice Krishna consciousness that will not be effective, because one must practice according to the Shastra. One doesn't concoct or make up one's own method that will not prove to be fruitful, and that will be explained a little bit later, why that does not work. So for the betterment of mankind, and actually in his commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Sri Jiva Goswami has stated that the reasons why Rupa Goswami has written this book, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is for the benefit or the betterment of humanity, and especially to satisfy the thirst that a self-realized soul has for divine love or prema bhakti. Especially to give those who are already perfectly fixed in self-realization the facility to satisfy their hunger or thirst for prema, or loving Krishna, to give them instructions so that they can advance to the platform of Braja Bhakti. Especially for that reason, Rupa Goswami has written this book. Now, when a Sanskrit work begins, there are different formulas that are followed. It is not like a Western novel or any Western book that the author writes according to the way he desires. There are certain formulas about how a book must begin. There is Vastu Nirdesh, Asirvad, and Namaskar, that the object has to be defined, the object of the book, the purpose of the book, what's its goal. It must be defined. Second, Asirvad means blessings, and Namaskar means obeisances. There are also other elements in other books, who is qualified to benefit from the book. These type of things are also given in other books, but those basic three, Vastu Nirdesh, Asirvad, and Namaskar, they are given in this introduction by Srila Prabhupada. And this introduction is basically Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu verses 1 through 12. The first 12 verses in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Now the first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which Prabhupada doesn't quote in the Sanskrit of, but this is the basic translation over here of the verse. I'll read the Sanskrit. This is the first verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Akila Rasamrita Murti Prasri Mara Ruchi Ruda Taraka Pali Kalita Shyamo Lalito Radha Prayan Vidur Jayate. That means, let Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, be glorified. By virtue of his expanding attractive features, he has subjugated the gopis named Taraka and Pali and absorbed Shyama and Lalita, other gopis. He is the most attractive lover of Srimati Radharani, and he is the reservoir of pleasure for all devotional mellows. So this verse was included by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Prabhupada translated it there in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And actually, although many of the verses of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu have not been rendered into Sanskrit, in the nectar of devotion, but they are included in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and Krishnadas Kaviraj's Chaitanya Charitamrita, which Prabhupada has translated. So this introduction consists of two parts, basically. The first part is Mangal Acharan, which is invoking auspiciousness. And that's the beginning of any Sanskrit work that is following the prescribed traditional and scriptural formulas. It is called Mangal Acharan, or the auspicious beginning. And therefore Prabhupada opens this book, the introduction, by the words invoking auspiciousness. That is the purpose of Mangal Acharan. And then, one by one, Prabhupada goes through Vastu Nirdesh, Asirvad, and Namaskar, establishing the object of the book, and then offering of obeisances and blessings. So we'll read how Prabhupada has translated this first verse. Now this again is the Vastu Nirdesh, or the establishment of the object of this entire book. So that Mangal Acharan is the first part of the introduction. And that goes up to, there's actually a third part we can say. It goes up to the middle of Roman numeral 20, which is just about a page and a half, or two-thirds down the way. Then there is one paragraph establishing the, or explaining the basic table of contents of the book. And then from then on to the rest, to the end of the introduction, it explains this verse over here, Anya Bilasita Sunyam, which all of you should memorize if you don't already know it. This verse is the definition, is Rupa Goswami's definition of pure devotional service. And the rest of the entire book of the Nectar of Devotion, of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is basically an expansion and an explanation of this one verse. So the first verse, or rather the verse, which is the entire book in seed, is called the Paribhasya Sutra. So this verse, Anyabhilasita Sunyam Gyanakama Anavrita Anakulena Krishna Nushilanam Bhakti Uttama, this is the Paribhasya Sutra, or the essential seed verse of the entire Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar of Devotion. So these are the three parts of the introduction. Again, the first part is this Mangal Acharan invoking auspiciousness, then a brief one paragraph at the bottom of page 20, the last paragraph on page 20 is the table of contents for the book, and then the rest of the introduction is an explanation of this verse over here, which is the Paribhasya Sutra. It is text 11 of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So we'll be covering the introduction. We'll take 2 days on the introduction. Today we'll go over how Prabhupada proceeds in the Mangal Acharan. And in addition, we'll probably be able to speak about this verse something, and then we'll go over the rest of the purport tomorrow. Okay. So the Mangal Acharan, or the invoking auspiciousness. Lord Sri Krishna, this again is Vastu Nirdesh, establishing the object of the Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this book, or the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Again, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu Nectar of Devotion, written by Rupa Goswami, and summarized in a summary study by Srila Prabhupada, is to give us instructions how we can advance in Krishna consciousness to the ultimate goal of prema bhakti, of love of Krishna. Invoking auspiciousness. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, the reservoir of all rasas. That means Akila Rasamrita Murti. He is the reservoir of all rasas. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes. Three qualities that Krishna has that are mentioned here by Srila Rupa Goswami. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is not just Rupa Goswami's opinion, but it is confirmed in all scriptures, not all scriptures, but it is intimated in all scriptures and confirmed by the Goswamis of Vrindavan, who have taken the scriptures and put it together and proven, especially in Sri Krishna Sandarbha by Sri Jiva Goswami, he has proven that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the source of even Narayan. Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. Eke chams kalopungsam. Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. This is explained by Srila Vyasadeva in the third chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, of the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna stu Bhagavan Swayam. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sava karana karanam. Ishvara parama Krishna sachidananda vigraha. Anadir Adya Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. Lord Brahma has confirmed this in his Brahma Samhita. And here, Akila Rasamrita Murti, he is the reservoir of all rasas or relationships. So we have spoken yesterday from Prabhupada's preface about what is rasa. Who remembers what rasa is? Raise your hand if you know. Wait, don't call out. Don't call out. This is school, remember. Okay. You are the first one to raise your hand. Yeah. What is rasa?
Rasa means a relationship or a taste, which is really sweet.
Yes. It is the sweet taste that is derived from a relationship. It can be mundane, but we are looking for the spiritual taste. And Krishna is the reservoir of rasa. That means that the taste that we are actually searching for must be in relationship with Krishna. He is the source of that sweet taste. And we should not look for that sweet taste anywhere else except in relating with Krishna. So He is the reservoir of all rasa, or relationships, and now, which are named here as neutrality, passive adoration, servitorship, friendship, parenthood, conjugal love. Those are the five mukya, direct rasas. And then seven will be named, which are gona or indirect rasas. Comedy, compassion, fear, chivalry, ghastliness, wonder, and devastation. He is the supreme attractive form. Again, this is centering our consciousness, so we know right from the very beginning what the object of this book is. It is to bring us to Krishna's lotus feet so that we can exchange rasa with Him. He is the supreme attractive form. That is the meaning of Krishna. He is all attractive. He is Bhagavan. Swayam Bhagavan. He is the original Bhagavan, the possessor of everything in this world that attracts us to another. Krishna possesses that in full. All beauty, all wealth, all strength, all renunciation, all fame, and all knowledge. He possesses this. That is called Bhaga, or opulence. And Avan means he who possesses all opulences that attract us. So he is Krishna. Bhagavan, Swayam Bhagavan, is Krishna. He who possesses all opulences that will attract us. He is captivated. He has captivated all the gopis headed by Taraka, Palika, who are less important than Shama and Lalita. And ultimately, the most important of all the gopis, Ladini Shakti, Krishna's internal energy, Srimati Radharani. So Krishna is the reservoir of everyone's relationship. He is the center. And that's what Prabhupada was explaining at the end of the preface. It is just a matter of learning how to give our love to Krishna. That is the purpose of this book, to teach us how to give our love to Krishna. So that is the first verse. Let His Lordship's grace be on us, so that there may not be any hindrance in the execution of this duty of writing the Nectar of Devotion, impelled by His Divine Grace, Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. Next. Because Prabhupada, our Prabhupada, he was ordered and impelled, inspired from their very first meeting. His first meeting with his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he ordered him to go to the West and preach in English. And Prabhupada did this late in his life, and it was perfect. And therefore, Prabhupada, in the service of his Guru Maharaj, is writing this book and invoking all auspiciousness for the completion of the book. Continues. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada and of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, by whose inspiration I have been engaged in the matter of compiling the summary study of Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. This is the sublime science of devotional service as propounded by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appeared 500 years ago in West Bengal, India, to propagate the movement of Krishna consciousness. Srila Rupa Goswami begins his great book by offering his respectful obeisances unto Sanatana Goswami, who is his elder brother and spiritual master, and he prays that Bhaktivedanta Sindhu may be very pleasing to him. He further prays that by residing in the ocean of nectar, Sri Sanatana Goswami may always feel transcendental pleasure in the service of Radha and Krishna. So a devotee never feels himself powerful. Actually speaking, a devotee is the only one who is powerful in this world. There is the famous story from Srimad Bhagavatam of how Durvasa Muni, the most powerful of all mystics, who was an incarnation, a partial incarnation of Shiv Shankar, Lord Shiva, he was actually defeated by Ambarish Maharaj, who was a king. Kings are supposed to be materialistic people, or usually materialistic people, and they are powerful only in a limited sense of their armies, etc. And mystics, like Durvasa Muni, have so much more power. But yet, this king, Ambarish, was not an ordinary king. He was protected by Krishna. And that is the source of a devotee's power. A devotee never thinks himself powerful, but he thinks himself a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Krishna. And therefore, he is always under Krishna's protection. And that makes him the most powerful. Just like the child, when he is walking across the street, the little boy is holding on to his father's hand, and he's not worried about the traffic, he's not worried about anything, because he is with his father. So similarly, the devotee is actually free from anxiety because he is carefully under the protection of Krishna and the internal energy. This is what it means to be a devotee. It is a fearless condition because one is in under the protection of the all-powerful Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. So therefore, although a devotee is so powerful, as explained here, we will see Rupa Goswami's great humility. He's thinking himself very, 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 very insignificant and little and powerless, but he's completely dependent on Krishna with great love, and therefore he becomes so powerful. And here in his humility, he's just simply thinking that I am able to do this. Rupa Goswami, he's quoting Rupa Goswami, saying, I am able to write this book just by the mercy of my Guru Sanatana Goswami. Actually, there are two meanings in this verse. He says, Rupa Goswami says, that I am writing this for the pleasure of Sanatana. And that means also Sanatana Goswami, and also For he who possesses an eternal Sanatana body, that is Lord Krishna. So for Krishna's pleasure and for the pleasure of Sanatana Goswami, this book is being written here. More obeisances. Let us offer our respectful obeisances to all the great devotees and acharyas who are compared to sharks in the great ocean of nectar and who do not care for the various rivers of liberation. So this is the position of a devotee, and this will be explained later, that a devotee, because he's in contact with Krishna, he is getting so much pleasure, so much incredible pleasure, because Krishna is Satchitananda Vigraha. So the devotee gets so much pleasure by serving Krishna in his relationship with Krishna that even the pleasure of being liberated, becoming one with Brahman, becoming the Supreme practically, not the slightest trace of misery. Even the pleasure of becoming one with Supreme is insignificant. And Rupa Goswami will cite this as a quality of pure devotional service. It is moksha laguna krit. It makes the pleasure of liberation insignificant. So the devotees, as Rupa Goswami will explain here in the next paragraph, he compares because he's calling this book the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu, the ocean of the nectar of devotion, of service, an ocean of Bhakti Ras, which is Amrita, which is the greatest of all immortal drinks. It is nectar. There is an ocean of that nectar. And the great devotees are compared to Makar. And Prabhupada usually translates that as sharks. Sometimes it's translated as crocodiles. But actually it is, we've never seen one, so we don't know exactly what it is. But Makar, like a shark. The sharks, they stay in this ocean. They don't bother with the small rivers that lead into the ocean, because they're happy and satisfied and they can go deep, deep, deep within the ocean and sport and enjoy the ocean to their heart's content, because it is unlimitedly vast. So similarly, the great devotees, they're expert at relishing and enjoying and sporting in this ocean of devotional service, the Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. They're expert at enjoying this ocean. And because they're expert in that, they're like sharks who care not for the rivers. The sharks don't bother with the rivers because the ocean is so vast they can get unlimited pleasure from that. So similarly, although impersonalists like to merge in the rivers merge into the ocean. This is what Prabhupada is explaining here. Just like the impersonalists use the example, they want to become one and merge just like the rivers merge into the ocean. But they forget that there are different aquatics, different fish in both the rivers and the ocean. And those great fish, the sharks, have no desire to even bother with the rivers. They are just simply satisfied in the ocean. So that is like the devotees. So Rupa Goswami and Prabhupada explains that those who are pure devotees, they always remain in the ocean of transcendental loving service to the Lord. And they have no business with any other process. They care for nothing other than loving Krishna. They are not attracted to anything material. Why? Because they are sporting in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the ocean of pure nectar of love of Krishna. Next, in the first complete paragraph on Roman numeral page 20, Rupa Goswami, as Prabhupada says, prays to his spiritual master Sanatana Goswami that this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu will not be interfered with by mamamsakas. There are two type of mamamsakas. There are different philosophies. There are six basic philosophical systems. And two of them are called mamamsaka. One is Uttarakhand, and the other is Purva. One means karmakanda and the other means jnanakanda. Karma and jnana. Trying to enjoy fruit of work, trying to enjoy oneself and even go to the heavenly planets. And the other is trying to merge and become one with God, as the jnanis do. So these are compared, Rupa Goswami compares this type of a mood to look at the shastra, the scriptures, to find out how to have these desires, to enjoy oneself through either karma or jnana, through fruit of work or merging and becoming one with the Supreme. These are like volcanoes that erupt at the bottom of the ocean. And because the ocean is so vast, if a volcano erupted in a small river, it would cause so much trouble. The lava would be flowing everywhere, the river would stop, a big mountain would appear. But the ocean of devotional service is so vast that the volcanoes of these two philosophies of karmakanda and jnanakanda, they can go off as much as they like. People can say what they like and follow these things. But this ocean of devotional service is so vast it will not be disturbed, like the volcanoes going off at the bottom of the ocean. The ocean is so vast and deep that it doesn't become disturbed. So Rupa Goswami is praying that his ocean of devotional service, his book, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, will not get disturbed. And then listen to this paragraph. Rupa Goswami's mood as a preacher, as a great acharya, and Prabhupada explains this. This should be the mood of anyone who actually wants to become a devotee preacher. Listen to this paragraph very carefully, and this will end the first part of the introduction. The author of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Srila Rupa Goswami, very humbly submits that he is just trying to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. Although he humbly thinks himself unfit for this work. This is a mood of a devotee. Rupa Goswami is an eternal associate of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. He's not a devotee, an ordinary devotee. He is a Nitya Siddha, Parikar. He is an eternal associate in the Leela of Radha and Krishna. And yet this is his mood, he's teaching us. And Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and all the associates of Mahaprabhu were so humble. And yet, we think ourselves very powerful, very great, I'm intelligent, I'm handsome, strong, learned, this, anything. I know so many things. And I can preach, I will do. No, we cannot do anything. Actually, we cannot do anything if we have the slightest tinge of that mood. So Rupa Goswami, experiencing the mood of a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, thinks himself humbly unfit for the preaching work. That should be the attitude of all the preachers of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. We should never think ourselves as great preachers, but we should always consider that we are simply instrumental to the previous acharyas. And simply by following in their footsteps, we may be able to do something for the benefit of suffering humanity. If we can learn this, one time, there was one song by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and in it it says, it's, oh hey Vaishnava Thakur, doyara sagara, like that, and there's one line, amito kangal, he says, Krishna, Krishna, bole, amito kangal. What does amito kangal mean?
I'm a beggar.
I am a beggar. I am a very wretched. When we think of a beggar, it's a person, and you can see them all the time out in our alley over there. I have nothing, and I'm depending on you. Give me something, please, please. So, for 1 year I was the chairman of the GBC, so I was speaking to one sannyasi, and he said, oh, you're the chairman of the GBC. And in my false humility, I said, Amito Kangal, I am just a beggar. And he looked at me very strongly and said, if you understood deeply the meaning of that one sentence, then you would be Krishna conscious. Amito Kangal, we have to become beggars for the mercy of the acharyas, our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, all the Vaishnavas. Not just, sometimes we even think, I just want the blessings of my spiritual master and I don't care anything about anyone else. I can offend everyone long as I'm serving my spiritual master. This will not help us, this attitude. We have to get all the blessings, our spiritual master, our Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada, all the Vaishnavas, and the acharyas. We should become very humble servants of the acharyas, beginning with our spiritual master and the Vaishnava. So make note of this very important paragraph if you want to actually become a preacher. The next paragraph describes what will be taught in this book. And if we look on page 409 of Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, there is an explanation, a little chart. I think it's in the small books too. I presume it is. Yes? There's a chart that describes what will be covered in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu in the Nectar of Devotion. There it is. So there, just like it is a Sindhu, it is an ocean. So the ocean has four different sides, eastern, southern, going clockwise, eastern, southern, western, and northern. So the first one is the eastern side, and that is what we are going to concentrate on in this course. The first 19 chapters of Nectar Devotion are the eastern side. Almost our entire time will be studying this eastern side of the ocean. Just as the ocean has waves, each of the different four sides of the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu Nectar Devotion have four waves. No, some of them have four waves. One of them has four waves. First one has four waves, second five, western five, and then nine. So on the eastern side, which we will spend our most time on, the first wave is called Samanya Bhakti. It is a general description of devotional service. From beginning to end, it will be generally described in general. Those are the first five chapters of Nectar of Devotion. Then the second wave is a description of Sadhana Bhakti. Sadhana means practice, the practices of bhakti. There are three different stages of the practices of bhakti. The first is sadhana, which is the second wave. The third is bhava, which is the third wave. The second is bhava, which is the third wave. And the third stage is prema bhakti, which is the fourth wave. So in this first eastern section, which we're going to be spending most of the semester on, I would study, it's the general description of bhakti, beginning with Anyabhilasita Sunyam, which is the definition of pure devotional service, then describe in general all the whole field of devotional service, what happens when you become, when you're practicing devotional service, what characteristics come up, etc. And there'll be a general description of bhava, sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. The two parts of sadhana bhakti will be described, two sections, vaidhi bhakti, raganuga bhakti. So that's the, that there'll be a general description of everything in the first section. And then in the second wave will be sadhana bhakti, both vaidhi and raganuga sadhana bhakti. And the third section is bhava bhakti, which is ecstatic love of Krishna. And the fourth section is prema bhakti. That is the first, the eastern side of the ocean. Prema bhakti is prayojana. It is the goal. Then, in the southern side of the ocean, it is called Samanya Bhagavad Bhakti Ras, the general symptoms of transcendental mellows. This means when one is on the transcendental platform, when one has achieved bhava or rati, then when you take these five ingredients and mix them together, you will get rasa. Sometimes I've heard devotees explain that vibhava, anubhav, sattvika bhav, vyabhachari bhav, and stai bhav, they are stages, but that is completely incorrect. They are ingredients, and when you mix these five ingredients, which are explained one by one in the second section of the ocean, when you mix them together, based on the stai bhav, on the rati, which will be described later, you get rasa. This is the ingredients, the formula, the cookbook to get rasa. The third section and the fourth section describe the different types of rasas that were mentioned right in the beginning of the right in the beginning of that first verse, where Krishna is Akhila Rasa Amrita Murti. There are 12 rasas, 5 that are primary, which is the western side, the Mukhya Bhakti Rasa, which is Shanta Bhakti, Priti Bhakti, Prayo Bhakti, Vatsalya, and Madhurya Bhakti Rasa. Means neutrality, servitorship, friendship, and parent-child relationship, and conjugal relationship. These are the 5 Mukhya or primary rasas, and then the north, and they'll be discussed in each of the different waves on the western side, and then on the northern side there is the 7 secondary rasas, laughing, astonishment, chivalry, compassion, anger, dread, ghastliness, and then there are 2 additional, those are the 7 mokya, excuse me, gona rasas, and then 8 and 9, the last waves, are the different mixings of all the ingredients and what works and what doesn't work. This is the basic overview of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Nectar Devotion covers it all. Any questions at this point?
Yeah, just...
I don't exactly understand in which places this Ashirvad, you mentioned this is blessing, this tree, this Mangalachar Narami, this tree. I notice where is this definition of goal and all these obeisances, but this blessing I don't find in line. I don't understand exactly who is blessing who or.
Prabhupada is accepting the blessings of his Guru Maharaj there. And the blessings are there. It's not expressly stated, the blessing that's given. But the blessing is that whoever reads this book and becomes engaged in devotional service will gradually elevate himself. But you're right. That asirvad, or giving of blessings, isn't directly mentioned here.
It's not here.
Not directly mentioned. Is he's getting blessings, but the giving blessings isn't mentioned. This is why we need Sahasra Swarup Prabhu here. All just by evoking the names of the acharyas, also there is blessing. Just by remembering Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Sanatan Goswami. That just any time you are feeling unhappy, you just remember these personalities. And just by remembering them, you will get their blessings and your unhappiness will go. But I'll look into that a little further too. Good question. You had others?
I only want you to repeat, you speak about this part in which Rupa Goswami compare this rice particular thief in the first two Vulgan interactions. You speak in some Sanskrit word and you speak this is two category or something because I don't catch.
Oh, the Mamamsakas. This is
two category.
Yeah, Uttara, but these Kama and Uttara. Kama Mamamsaka means the philosophy of karma. Just as basically karma kanda, using the Vedic literatures for the purpose of elevation, material elevation. You'll be studying this in the beginning of the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. There is description of this, karma kanda. And the other is what we usually think of as the Vedanta philosophy, or jnana yoga, jnana. That's called Uttar, Vedanta Sutra. That's how it's usually. So it's Vedic rituals and Vedanta, like that, Uttar Mamangs. Yeah. Yeah. Karma Kanda is not yoga. Yoga means that the goal, transcendental objective has been assigned. But this you'll learn about very deeply in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Karma Yoga means when you do what you like to do and offer the results to Krishna. Karma Kanda means you follow the Vedic rituals for the purpose of elevation and getting material rewards. There is no transcendental objective. That's the essence, but we'll describe that later. But if you notice, we don't just chant and dance and be happy. We go to Mangal Arati, we chant around, we follow the four rules, we look at the deities, we offer the deities garlands. There are so many things that we do. We engage in preaching. These are the practices of sadhana. But the essence of sadhana bhakti, which Rupa Goswami will describe, is smartavya satatam vishnu vishmartavya na jatuchet. Sava vidhi nisheda cha etiyo eva kinkara. You might as well memorize that verse. It's very important. It says that to always remember Krishna and to never forget him. Sava vidhi nisheda. Vidhi means all the rules of what you should do, and nisheda means all the prohibitory rules, all the things you shouldn't do. Etiyo eva kinkara. They're all servants of this one rule, to always remember Krishna and never forget him. That is the essence of sadhana. So all you have to do is always remember Krishna and never forget him. But to help us always remember Krishna and never forget him, there are so many other practices. 64 items of devotional service will be described by Rupa Goswami in the second section entitled Sadhana Bhakti. So we should not, in other words, we should understand this. And this, in the general description of bhakti, this will all be described. But that means that we should always keep in mind what the purpose of what we are doing is. So when we're chanting our rounds, we should be remembering Krishna, not thinking about driving a car or working on our computer or whatever. We should be thinking about Krishna. Smartavya satatam vishnu vishmartavya na jatuchi. I couldn't hear. Yeah. No, but the animals don't merge. The aquatics never merge. This is defeating the Mayavada. The Maya, it's a mixture of two examples, actually. Prabhupada uses both of them. That just as the Mayavadis use the example, the rivers merge into the ocean. So similarly, we become one, right? But we say, yes, the water may merge, but the living entities living in the water don't merge, right? There are some kind of fish, the dolphins in Mayapur. There are sea dolphins, and they go up the river, and there's different kinds of fish that will go up the rivers even. So they don't merge, they never become one with the ocean, they're always eternally individuals. So there are actually two examples in there. Two separate examples. One is the Mayavadis ones, the rivers in the ocean, and the other is the aquatics. that don't merge, but those who are big aquatics, who are already in the ocean, it is not that they have any desire to play in the river to get some enjoyment, because they have everything they require in the ocean.
So the animal is compared to the animal in the ocean?
Yeah.
And the river itself?
Yeah, actually, but they compare themselves to the river, but we know that they are the fish, because even if you, we are individuals eternally, so even if we become one with the Supreme, we actually never lose our individuality, but we lose our consciousness of our individuality. Follow? We are eternally individuals, and we are the symptom. See, the Mayavadis say that we are consciousness, but we say that we have consciousness. So their consciousness merges, but they don't merge. Any other questions? Yeah.
And also the he said that the Mayavadi, they fall the Lifa go to the ocean. He said that
they what?
The Mayavadi, they merge from the Lifa into the ocean. Does that mean that they also come to the pond, to the ocean surface, because the ocean compared to the ocean surface?
Unfortunately, they stay on the outside. Because actually the Mayavadis themselves actually never get into the ocean, because they are aparadis. They never actually merge, but the Brahmavadis can merge. Mogasya moga kamano moga jnana vichetasa. That means that all their hopes, because they have rakshashim asurim chaiva, something mohanim shrita, because prakriti mohanim shrita. That means because they've adopted a rakshasha asurament transcendental platform, but just on the peripherals, the outside. Oh yeah, this is.
The Buddhism compares this Karmakandi and the Gyanis as volcanoes within the ocean.
They can, in other words, the point is that he doesn't want them to disturb this book. That is the point. And they can take the scriptures and twist them and turn them and bend them and squeeze them in any way they want. And they could preach anything that they like and have their own philosophy. But it is compared to the going off of a volcano underneath the ocean. It will not disturb the ocean. That's the point.
What's the main difference between Mayavadi and Brahmavadi?
The Mayavadis accept, they say that Krishna's transcendental body is composed of the mode of goodness. They don't accept the eternality and the transcendental nature of Krishna's body. That is a Maya body. So they're following the path of Maya. They say everything is Maya. But the Brahma bodies, they accept Krishna's body as transcendental, that the Lord has a transcendental body, but they think that Brahman is supreme, the supreme and superior realization. So they prefer to go there. They are very, very unfortunate, and they're committing spiritual suicide. But they are not, but Krishna will actually allow them. Yaya tamam prapadyante tamstitaiva bhajami. Krishna will allow them to merge. But the Mayavadis, they take their birth as trees and things like that. This is the conclusion.
The Mayavadis do enter the Brahman. No,
they're offenders, they cannot.
So what is the maximum they can go?
To hell.
The Mayavadi, they become diamonds and jewels.
Diamonds and
yeah,
jewels.
They like to be like without any fees or something, so they become precious.
Well, they can jewels. Because why would they become precious jewels? They're offended. They can become dirty old rocks.
You were explaining how the jiva gives up his consciousness when he emerges into the Brahman.
He loses consciousness of his individuality.
So does he still maintain desire?
No. It's so spiritual suicide. He doesn't... There are different ways to explain this. In the immature stage, if one reads the verse in Prabhupada's purport to Aruha Yenye Ravindaksha Vimuktamani Nastvayastava Veda Vashuddha Buddhaya. He is avashuddha buddhaya in the sadhaka, in the practitioner stage. And therefore he may go up, he could become vimukta maninas, liberated just in his mind, but he must fall down. But once he gets up there, he actually gets his desire by Krishna's mercy and merges, then he will not fall down, and it's called spiritual suicide. For that reason, it's the worst thing that can possibly happen. Because you're finished. Prabhupada sometimes explains it the other way though, but generally it is understood that that is on the in the practitioner, sadhaka platform. Once that makes it even worse, because you lose your ability to ever serve Krishna, ever, 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 eternally. So what could be worse than that? You're finished. Forever. No turning back. Spiritual suicide. Finished. Therefore it is considered hell. Worse than hell. The devotees would rather be in hell than for that to happen. Yeah. Shankara's philosophy is Vaishnavad. But his followers mixed it up and became Mayavads. Last question, So tomorrow we're going to go over this verse and we'll probably have to spend another 2 days. Well, you have to practice what you have to make advancement yourself. You have to become a preacher. You have to be on the path. You have to have knowledge of the actual path. Because without achar or proper activities, Vaishnava sarachar, what will be the prachar or the word? What will be the value of your words? Smoking cigarettes, saying don't smoke. Who will listen to you? So if we become fixed in Krishna consciousness and exalted lovers of Krishna and lovers of Sisi Radha and Krishna and deep, deep, deep in our devotion, then our preaching will be so powerful. Just like if I say you're not your body, and you can get a parrot to say you're not your body. And Prabhupada says it. Now, depending upon... So that's a very basic philosophical point, right? So depending upon how much realization you have piled on top of that, that point will have different weight, depending upon who says it. So we should understand, so right from the very beginning, that preaching is our activity. It's an activity of sadhana, because it helps us remember Krishna, and it's good for the world. But we are meant to become lovers of Radha and Krishna. We are meant to become real devotees, lovers, prema bhaktas. That is the purpose of the Krishna conscious movement, not just perpetuating preaching. It is to become lovers of Krishna and bring others as well. Right? Sometimes people get so involved in the work of it all that they forget the purpose and they forget themselves. They forget their own sadhana, their own practices. And what happens? It's like a tree. A tree can grow very high, but if it grows high without the roots going deep, when there's a wind, it will be knocked over. So we must, if we want to become preachers, we must become devotees, deep devotees. Not just grow high and do so many wonderful things outside, but we should do wonderful things inside as well. High and deep. Not just deep, not just high. High and deep. That was your last question. Actually, okay. If it's an easy one, I'll answer it now. If it's a real hard one, I'll think about it overnight.
No. Prabhupada says that merging into Brahma is spiritual.
Ah, why? You want to do this? The platform of Brahman, the spiritual platform, is the platform on which devotional service takes place. That is the point. That is the point. If you are going the step-by-step method, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nakangshati, on the actual devotional service takes place on the spiritual platform. We are not devotees at this point. We are just aspiring practitioners, sarakas. Actual devotion is only on that Sudha-Sattva platform, Brahman platform. It is pure. No material contamination. But that doesn't mean that if you're on that platform, you merge in with Brahman, you merge, you become, your interest becomes one with Brahman. Just like the aquatics who flow into the ocean, they don't just become one with the ocean, they retain their individuality. Okay? You sure? Okay, let's stop because it's time for Prasad. Jai Prabhupada.